Hey, welcome to the podcast. We've got a great podcast for you today. And by the way, if you ever miss any of the shows or you want to hear the other people's opinions on stuff, we have just a buttload of really great shows and podcasts. You can find them all by joining blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn and you're going to save 10%. All right, today's podcast, The Arrogance of the Left. I think I sense something is changing, and it may be really early, but something is changing, and we'll talk about that. And I think you're going to really enjoy that opening monologue. Also, the guy up in Chicago who has been on the story of Jussie Smollett from the beginning, he's from Fox 32. Nobody wanted to listen to him, but he's been right every step of the way. He tells us what's really going on in Chicago. David Horowitz on his Dark Agenda. This is a new book called The War to Destroy Christian America. Dark Agenda. Also, Laura Logan. What's happening with Laura Logan? And a great woman who says, don't go to college. That's what she wants to do in her commencement address at high schools all across America. Nobody wants to hear it because she said, college is a giant scam. A great one for college students and for those considering going to college, and parents need to listen. And then we wrap it up with a very controversial painting I found at a yard sale that we really need your help to decide on what we should do, because maybe the artist has gone too far. You decide.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I want to thank our spotlight sponsor. It is Home Title Lock.
Yeah, Home Title Lock is a great company. They we've seen all these developments that have come out the last few weeks. There was the all these leaks that have come out. Then you have the grand jury report that they had 2,000 complaints just in Manhattan over title fraud. Complaints really had gone over almost every case involved a faulty notarization, and this is what they do. They take these fake notary stamps and they make it seem like they can transfer their title within. They forge some documents, and all of a sudden you're going to get screwed. Criminals look for the vulnerable properties, and they scan the obituaries and pour through your public records. Once the title is transferred, the fraudsters take out the mortgage, sell the property, and sometimes they even rent it out. Don't go down this road, please. Don't be a victim of this. HomeTitleLock.com is the place to go to make sure it does not happen to you. HomeTitleLock.com is the place to go. Give them a call or go to their website. Check it out. It will serve a free title scan and report. It's a $100 value. HomeTitleLock.com.
If you've listened to me for a long time, I've said since about 2000, maybe 7, because of the arrogance of Barack Obama, I noticed it in him first. And I prayed a lot about, okay, well, this is not a good development, the direction of our country. What's going to happen? And I was overwhelmed with the feeling of a couple of things. They're not enemies of yours. They are enemies of freedom of mankind. And that is on your stewardship, but I'm the owner of those. So this is not a fight you're fighting alone. Second thing, watch their arrogance, because it will be their undoing in the end. And I've waited and I've waited and I've patiently waited. And I want to tell you, I think it's here. Now, let me break this down into several categories, and I will show you there is very little you have to fight for. There is a lot you need to stand for, but very little you need to fight for. Let's start here. Abortion. Is abortion the same topic, the same thing we're fighting in the same way today as we were a year ago? No. Why? Because of arrogance. Think about what we have always traditionally been fighting for. We've been fighting for the right of the child. Other people have been fighting for the right of the mother. And it was supposed to be safe, rare, and legal. it's really no longer safe. They're doing all kinds of practices to save time at Planned Parenthood that take the ultrasound out of it. It is much safer if you use an ultrasound, but they want to make money. It is legal, but now they're going for the infanticide rules. So legal, yeah, it has been legal, but now they're going for something completely different. And then rare? No, they're shouting the abortion. And this started about a year ago where they were saying, we got to shout our abortion. We're really thrilled. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. One woman in Seattle was given a speech and she said, my first abortion was my best abortion. And it happened in Seattle. And it's craziness. Then their arrogance took them to say, we want to be able to kill an unwanted child after birth. Just let them die. Give birth, let them die. That was way too far. And what did they do? They said, we want to light up the New York skyline pink in celebration of that. Arrogance. And their arrogance has led us to a place now to where people are waking up. If you have seen the latest polls, there has been a massive shift towards life because of this. A massive shift. And I think we're on the cusp of ending abortion as we know it. I really do. So there's one. Their arrogance. They took it too far. Look what happened just this week with the media and Trump. They have been so arrogant for the last 2 years. They have condemned him every step of the way. They have not done what reasonable people do. Look, I don't like this about him, but I do like this about him. And if he is guilty, if he is a traitor to our country, if he is in bed with Russia, then he should be impeached. He should probably go to jail. That's what a normal human being would say. But that's not what the media has been saying. And so they have overplayed their hand. And they've wanted to get him because they were convinced in their arrogance they knew what happened. Now that the facts are out and the investigation is over, they can't accept that. And so they're doubling down. They cannot admit defeat. Who does that? A humble person or an arrogant person? They can't admit that they were wrong. Now, we've been saying for a while, get over it. But now our Democratic voting neighbors, not the people in Washington, our neighbors, they're saying the same thing to the media. Get over it, man. You're looking ridiculous. Arrogance with the media. Anti-Semitism, care. Congresswoman Omar Ilan. The Democrats won't condemn anti-Semitism. When we all know what anti-Semitism is, and we know why anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine. It's like lynching. We all know it when we see it, and we all know that it's wrong. But they won't do it. Why? Because they're in the pocket of care. Americans, both Democrats, Republicans, also independents, we all know an unindicted co-conspirator is a bad thing. A offshoot, an actual arm of the Muslim Brotherhood and a sister organization, literal sister organization to Hamas, is CARE, an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation, which was financing terror. Okay. They've gotten so powerful that they think they can say and do anything. But let me tell you, the first crisis, and Americans will turn. They're using the Jesse Smollett cover. Well, I'm a burqa wearing, I'm a hijab wearing, I'm a black, I'm a oppressed minority. They're using all of this stuff, and it only plays for so long. And the arrogance is, you Americans are too stupid to see the difference between a sister of Hamas and AIPAC. you're just too stupid to see it. So we're just gonna roll right over you. And it's the same thing with the border. They used to be, everybody was for border security. Come on, everyone is for some sort of border security. Now the Democrats say they're for open borders. Only the libertarians, I mean the deep libertarians, have been for fully open borders. But even that comes with the caveat of, yeah, but no welfare state as well. Everyone has been for this, but not now. And they tried to make everybody in America feel like they're a racist if they want a border wall. But what they don't understand is the border wall isn't because we don't like Mexicans. The border wall is because we don't trust Washington. We don't believe that Washington will actually enforce any law for more than one term of a president, if that. And we know that there is trouble on the border. We know that there are bad people coming in. We know that there are also some good families that are coming in. And nobody cares about the difference between the two. We know that our cities are out of control because they become sanctuary cities. And they have called us racist because we believe in the rule of law. That's what that border wall represents. Not a statement about Mexico, but a statement about the people we keep sending to Washington. We don't trust them to protect the things that we value. The arrogance, again, is you're racist. That's their arrogance. I'm not, but you are. Socialism and the New Green Deal. He was doing a stand-up comedy routine. I don't know if you saw him yesterday, but he had a picture of Reagan riding in on a Velociraptor, as we all know, happened in the last battle of the Cold War. And he started there and ended up with seahorses from Aquaman being the only way to get to Hawaii. And he was talking about the absurdity of all of this. When Mike Lee is actually funny, you're on the losing side. When Mike Lee can take and show how crazy this is, Mike Lee, and you'll laugh out loud, you're on the wrong side. Your arrogance has said everybody believes in global warming. And the science is settled, and I don't even have to talk to anybody about it. Your arrogance of we're all socialists now. No, we're not. Your arrogance in social justice, Me Too, Kavanaugh, the Covington Catholic. What did that turn into? You are guilty until you can prove yourself innocent. But as we saw with Kavanaugh and Covington Catholic, it doesn't even matter if you can prove yourself innocent. You're guilty of something. And the arrogance of the left and the social justice warriors, they are so convinced that they are right on all of these things, that there is a white original sin that we must all pay for, and we must cleanse ourselves of white people and cleanse ourselves of this love of country, of constitution. Their arrogance is destroying them. And it started with Michael Brown. I'm sorry, it didn't start with Michael Brown. It started with Henry Louis Gates and the beer summit. You remember that? The president saying police acted stupidly. He had nothing. He had nothing. And it turned out that wasn't the case. And he had to reverse himself with a beer summit. And it went on and on and on. Michael Brown, hands up, don't shoot. Wait a minute. That guy was the guy saying, hands up, I'm going to rob you. And he was turned into a victim. And it is compounded until we got to Jesse Smollett. And I'm going to get into that here in a second. But when you have Rahm Emanuel, think of this, Rahm Emanuel from the Obama White House saying that this is not justice. When they are releasing text messages between this prosecutor, Fox, and Michelle Obama's chief of staff, and showing, wait a minute, there's some sort of collusion here. When you have George Soros being outed now, not by the right, but being outed as this is the one who put her into office. And when you have people like Rahm Emanuel saying, this is wrong. This is dirty. This is corrupt. This isn't justice. Wow. You're seeing a change. You're seeing a massive, massive change. Because people feel it in their bones, we're becoming a mobocracy. And they don't like it. It's not the way Americans are. Democrats or Republicans. I want to tell you what happened with Jesse Smollett. And I want to tell you how we need to behave. There are not things that we need to fight for. There are things that we need to stand for. And I'll explain that difference and why it's so important. Because things are changing. Their own arrogance is going to destroy them. All we have to do is welcome people back home.
The best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Let's go to Chicago. We have so many things to cover. Avenatti is just a comedy fun fest that we have to get to today. But Smollett has also happened, where yesterday, in case you don't know, he's the guy that claimed that he was beaten up in Chicago by two men. He identified the men. The police said, oh, it's those guys, because we know who those guys are. And they turned out to be friends of Smollett. They had video of them buying bleach and a rope. They said that he had hired them to do that. Now, how were the charges dismissed? How were felony charges dismissed? We go to the guy who has been on this from the beginning and has had the balls to say the truth the whole time, no matter where the facts might lead. It's Rafer Weigel. He is from Fox 32 in Chicago. Rafer, what the hell happened?
Yeah, you know, that's the big question, Glenn. I'm sitting here in my newsroom right now. I just finished interviewing one of Jesse Smollett's lawyers, Patricia Brown Holmes. You know, to go from 16 counts from a grand jury to we're throwing out case, how do you go from point A to point B? She claims that they were able to convince the state's attorney's office that they didn't have a strong enough case and they weren't going to win the case. Chicago police dispute that. They felt that they had enough evidence to win the case handedly. But in the end, you know, the optics on this does not look good to the state's attorney's office, especially given the lot of the recent discoveries from media outlets like ours that, you know, uncovered the email to Michelle Obama's former chief of staff and also, you know, text messages to a family member of Jesse Smollett to state's attorney Kim Fox, essentially asking her to make this go away. And then her office does just that. You know, it doesn't look good. But I guess she figured she picked the lesser of two evils, that if she does take this case and she loses, you know, then she becomes Mr. Marsha Clark. So that's that one theory.
Rafer, can you move to another place? Because you're dropping out so much. We barely understood the Marsha Clark comment that she might look like Marsha Clark.
Oh, I apologize, Glenn. Is this any better?
Yes, that's much better.
Okay,
so tell me, does anybody actually believe? Because I do not want to be like the media with Donald Trump. You know, if this is the way the justice system has decided and it is fair and on the up and up, I accept that. But I'm finding this very hard to stomach because none of it looks right. None of it looks right.
No, and Mayor Emanuel, you know, point blank, he stopped short of calling it corruption. The theory is that state's attorney's office or state's attorney Kim Fox procured some kind of political favor to do this, but Smollett's legal team insist there were just too many holes in the case. And ultimately, it was going to come down to Jesse Smollett's word against the Osandero brothers. And there were some credibility issues with the Ocendero brothers. And, you know, with their word against his, you know, all they needed was one juror to find him, you know, a shadow of a doubt, and nothing was going to happen to Smollett. And, Kim Fox is not unique in that she's a state's attorney who likes to win cases. I think she got scared. I think she just didn't think she was going to win it, and she didn't want to have the optics of that. But the optics of this are even worse.
Okay, so wait a minute. I understand. First of all, we have the video of them buying the rope and the bleach. Was there mm-hmm. some other rope and bleach project they were working on? So I understand. I understand that they had credibility issues. Fine. Okay. Got it. But it looks pretty good. But like you said, only one person has to say reasonable doubt. I don't think they did. And he's off. You had 16 federal charges. You don't get 16 hours in Rainbow Push and a $10,000 fine and the ability to go out and say, yep, I was exonerated. I didn't do it.
Well, and then the interesting thing is that the state's attorney's office talked out of both sides of their mouth because they dropped the case, but then they turn around and say that he's not exonerated. We're not saying he's innocent. We're just not going to pursue the case. Well, that doesn't seem to make any sense.
No.
And, you know, your police department puts in thousands of man hours into this case, and they felt they had a stack of evidence that what we know about is just the tip of the iceberg, that they felt they had an open and shut case. And they claim that the state's attorney did not even contact them directly. My sources at PD said they were at the graduation ceremony yesterday for new recruits, and it was leaked to them through a source. And they called that unprofessional and disrespectful. And I don't think there's anybody that disagrees with that who knows anything. I mean, and now the state's attorney's office has a huge chasm between the Chicago Police Department, you know, two arms of the justice system now completely at odds in a city where you already have thousands of crimes unsolved, you know, and solving crimes are already a problem. So where does this take us into the future? I mean, it's a risk reward thing. And it doesn't seem that the risk outweighed the reward, at least from a big picture.
Is there any explanation on, okay, so if they say they couldn't win the case, they convince them that it would be really tough. Yeah, well, you know what? We're both rolling the dice, aren't we? Because he could go to jail for prison for, you know, 20 years. So, well, I guess we're both rolling the dice. That's where you negotiate. How did they negotiate? Who negotiated this deal?
There was no negotiation, it seems, because, you know, Jesse Smollett got everything he wanted, and all the state's attorney's office got was, you know, $10,000 from his bond proffer. And they also have sealed the record, so that my Freedom of Information Act requests won't be granted. I won't be able to see that video or see any of the evidence that none of us will. And so what did the state attorney get out of this? I mean, it's you're right. It was a total sweetheart deal. And you just have to go, well, what did Kim Fox get out of this? Now, they insist that she was not the one that did this because she had recused herself. I can tell you, nobody's buying that. Nobody outside of Smollett's legal team has told me that they're buying that one. So, Mayor Emanuel basically came out and said it without saying it. Something changed hands here. There was some kind of quid pro quo. We just don't know what it is. And it doesn't look good.
So is this going to the FBI? Is anybody going to look into this?
Well, the Fraternal Order of Police is asking for the feds to conduct an internal investigation, arguing that Kim Fox may have broken the law because she supposedly recused herself from this case, and then her office goes ahead and throws it out the window. They feel that that's a violation and possibly illegal. The other thing that's potentially a problem for Smollett is the FBI investigating and the U.S. Postal Service investigating that letter. The mail fraud, potential terrorism charge. And I know a lot of your listeners are big on the deep state conspiracy that the FBI has been politicized. Well, you know what? There's going to be a lot of attention to what they do here. And if they decide that they don't want to go forward and persecute Smollett on any charges, then they might be accused of the exact same thing. But as far as we know, they are still investigating that. And if they come down with federal charges, well, that's not something that's going to get thrown out. So that could potentially be real trouble for Smollett. And that is still right now, as of this moment, looming for him.
One of the things that amazes me is when I listen to 9 solid minutes of Rahm Emanuel and he sounds like me, something has fundamentally changed. Something has changed.
It's brought a lot of people together as much as it's divided people apart. And it is interesting, Glenn, that initially when this came out, you know, it was pretty much divided amongst racial and party lines. you know, the liberals and the left were in favor of Similac, the right, you know, thought he made it up. When it came out with the superintendents with all the evidence that they had, then it shifted. You know, there was a lot less support for Similac on the left and even along racial lines. And, you know, I don't know if that's changed. I'm not sure that it has been changed. I think a lot of people are, you know, wanted to find out for sure. You know, it's almost like you were watching a football game and you're getting ready to go to the fourth quarter with the game tied. And then you said, you know what, we're going to call a game. And people feel like, you know, they wanted to see this play out. But, you know, definitely the police wanted to see this play
out.
Well,
I will tell you this. The problem is that the state's attorney did not. They are allowing him to claim that he won, that he was vindicated,
right.
And the left is going to use that. He's already
right.
used that. The arrogance of Empire and the writers coming out immediately saying, we'll see you Wednesday night, meaning
right.
we'll welcome him back and we welcome you back because we were right all along. That is not going to sit well with people who actually believe, forget about race, who believe
right.
in justice.
Right. And people who are, you know, victims of hate crimes or know people who have been victims of legitimate hate crimes. You know, it's interesting. It's just, it's going to leave a lot of open wounds. When he walked out of the courthouse, I was actually the only reporter outside waiting for him because I knew he wasn't going to answer anything inside. So I waited outside and we went along. I just said, you feel vindicated? He said, yes, I do. But then he didn't answer any other questions after that. But he said it with, you know, such conviction. And you're right. It's you know, look, the guy feels emboldened. And why wouldn't he? I mean, look, they gave him a sweetheart deal without him having to give up anything in return, except for some community service that we didn't even know about until later in the day yesterday. I mean, initially they announced that they were going to drop the charges and they said, well, why? Well, he did community service. Well, what did he do that? Well, it was a while ago. I mean, it was very ambiguous and strange. The whole thing, you know, whether you're partisan on this or not, objectively looking at it, the whole thing is very, very confusing.
What do we look for next?
We look for the FBI investigation into the mail, into the letter. That's the next thing we look at. I don't think that my sources are telling me that the DOJ is probably not going to take this up and look at any improprieties in Kim Fox's office because it's not that important of a case. You know, this isn't Rod Blagojevich, you know, in a corruption case. This is a guy with, you know, a felony, you know, disorderly conduct charge. So they're probably just going to let it slide. So really it comes down to the federal investigation. And, you know, I've often
what does that do to the city?
Exactly. That is a very real question, Glenn, because this is already, you know, a city where, you know, behind closed doors, there was already a strained relationship between the Chicago Police Department and the state's attorney's office. They wouldn't acknowledge it publicly, but there has been that case because I know police are frustrated because quite often they've turned over evidence. They felt that they had an open and shut case, and the state's attorney's office decides not to move forward. And that's pretty common. But now this is the first time they've come out publicly and blasted that office. And now the relationship is really strained. What does this do for solving crime going forward? You know, I mean, are police going to be, you know, this is going to be a huge blow to their morale. They did all this work. They presented the case. They put it in front of her, and they decided, you know what, we're not going to move forward. So, I mean, this could have long-term ramifications, and I don't feel it is good for the city. You know, people can argue it's not a violent crime. Why waste the money and the taxpayer money to go forward? Well, this is about the relationship between these two arms of the justice system here in Chicago that right now really don't like each other.
Mm. Rafer, thank you so much. Rafer Weigel from Fox 32 and the reporter who has broken this open wide. We look forward to talking to you again when there's a new development. Thank you so much, Rafer. Appreciate
Anytime,
it.
Anytime, sir. Thank
you. You bet. Bye-bye.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We have a good friend and I think this guy is an American hero. David Horowitz is with us. Hello, David. How are you?
Hi, Glenn. Glenn, thank you for all the great work you do.
Thank you. And I know it's always a mutual admiration society whenever we talk to each other because I so respect you. I want to ask you just before we get into what you're scheduled to talk about, I want to talk to you just to get some quick highlight thoughts on a couple of things. The way the media is now treating the Mueller report, what are your thoughts now about what's coming or what all of this means?
Well, we are still in the midst of the first attempted coup in the history of the country. And the coup that was led, of course, by the Obama White, by Obama himself and the Obama White House, but by our intelligence agencies. And, you know, how corrupt they are. I don't know if it shocked you, but it shocked me. I've been in politics all these years. I just couldn't believe it. So they're not going to stop until they run into, you know, I've always said this, the left only stops when it runs into a wall.
Now, let me ask you this. I think there is a wall that is coming. I think they've overplayed their hand, and I'm hopeful of this. With abortion, with the Smollett case, with the way the media is behaving, I think that they have, you know, Covington Catholic, they have just overplayed this and misread the American people. We're not all socialists. We're not all radicals. We don't want this. And I think there are some Democrats, and I don't mean the ones in Washington. I mean our neighbors, that are starting to wake up and go, I don't want any of this stuff. This is crazy. Agree or disagree?
My greatest worry is that they're going to arrest Cortez for the crime she's already committed. I want her out front and up front. The same with that Ilhan Omar. We have a Muslim Brotherhood caucus in the Congress.
I know.
I just wanted to, you know, speak to what you said at the outset. I am an agnostic, which means I just don't know.
Right.
It's different from atheism as a religion.
Correct.
It's a faith. But when I was leaving the radical left, I re-examined the country we had set out to destroy. And the first thing that occurred to me is the inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which even radicals, they think they want to embrace.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have inalienable rights unless there's a God.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it isn't given by a divinity, these rights, it's given by government, so government can take them away. And that was an easy thought. A harder one was for an agnostic to embrace it.
Right.
But it immediately occurred to me again that you have to have a respect for the belief in God and a respect for the people who believe in God. And if you don't have that, you can't defend your own freedoms. That's where I began.
All right. So let me take you back a little bit further, because you talk about this in this is a very critical book, and it's short. It's easy to read. It's called Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. And I want to take people back. You in one of the chapters talk about your friend, Betty Van Patten, who was killed by the Black Panthers. And this was the change. This is where they overplayed their hand and you went, wait a minute, this doesn't fit with what I believe or what I thought we believed. Explain.
I was involved with murderers, and there was no way to, you know, of course you can't correct when they killed a dozen people, the Black Panthers. Jesse Smollett's mother is a Black Panther. Her closest friend is Angela Davis. So it all goes back. But again, I learned to appreciate that America, when America makes mistakes, when it does deeds that are criminal or wrong,
mm-hmm.
it finds a way to correct them. It finds a way to try to figure out what happened so it won't happen again. The left never looks back. The left commits, you know, look at the Vietnam War. The left wasn't anti-war. It was anti-American. When the communists slaughtered 2.5 million Indochinese peasants, there wasn't a single protest, not one. The left never examines its own crimes, which are monstrous, and so it can never correct them. And of course, you know, to be a Christian or a Jew, if you are a believer, is to be humbled. You understand that we're the problem. You understand that inside every individual is the problem that leads to the social problems that we confront. That people are corrupt, they lie, they cheat, they're narcissistic, they think about themselves first. The lying is there, one of the biggest of the sins that people regularly and daily commit. So it gives you a caution before you're going to tear up everything and remake the world. And when you look at somebody like this empty-headed Cortez woman, you're horrified by her shallowness and her obvious willingness. They will do anything to try to achieve their goals. The idea of confiscating how many million gasoline cars are there? 250 million, probably, maybe 300 million. And they want to take away these cars in a 10-year period. How are they going to do that without instituting a police state? And they will have no hesitation about doing it, the police state. I mean, you know, I thought the Kavanaugh hearings were horrifying.
Horrifying. Horrifying.
You know, she was, a liar from the get-go. Why were they even talking about an incident that happened 34, or if it happened, that allegedly happened 34 years ago between two high school students at a drunken party where there was actually no sex anyway? How could you put that before the nation and shred a man's, reputation? With the Democrats, there's nothing they're not capable of. I never thought I'd live to see the day that they would pass laws to allow you to kill a child that's been born. Never would have occurred to me. I would have denied it. And here we are.
David, again, I think they're overplaying their hand. They're misreading the people, because I think that a lot of people feel this way. In the book, you talk about Madeleine Murray O'Hare. And you talk about the Supreme Court decision of school prayer, and you say there's a real huge impact from there.
Yeah, the left found an institution. Actually, there's a liberal who wrote a book calling the Supreme Court the most dangerous branch. The Supreme Court, it's 9 lawyers appointed for life by politicians. Hmm. Now, how could that go wrong? what they did was, you just changed the fundamental law of the United States overnight with no basis in the Constitution. And they did it at the behest of this Madeleine Murray O'Hare, who was a lunatic. She ended up getting murdered by one of her followers. She was just a crazy person. She tried to defect to the Soviet Union with her family right before she launched her school campaign. Mm. And the Russians refused to let her in because they saw she was a nutcase. But the progressives on the Supreme Court treated her like she was somebody to be taken seriously. And they just stripped the schools of any... You can't refer to religion. You can't teach that the Pilgrims were Christians or that they were fleeing religious persecution. They've stripped generations of American school children, and still are doing it, of any understanding of how they have the freedoms they have.
I will tell you, David, when I read the book and reading prayer in schools in particular, I learned something. I thought prayer in school, because I grew up in a Catholic school, so I thought prayer in school was something like, we had with Catholics or Jesus heavy or whatever. And for the first time, I saw the 23-word text of the prayer that was the problem. Sure. And listened to it. In case most people, I don't think, have ever heard this. Almighty God, we acknowledge our dependence upon thee and we beg thy blessings upon us, our parents, our teachers, and our country. Amen. You eliminate that. You eliminate humility. You eliminate the thought of others before us. You eliminate the idea that our parents and our teachers and our country, they are worth something. They are worth praying for. I mean, it's amazing how non-denominational, how objectionable this really is, except for the few that say, I won't recognize a God. And it doesn't even pick a God. I always thought it was like Jesus. It doesn't even pick a God.
No, you know, I went to school when there was still prayer in the schools. And the prayer was the Lord's Prayer, which is a Christian prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And just as a youngster, I just was fascinated. I loved the language. Lead us not into temptation, and for thine is the power and kingdom and the glory. I couldn't understand why they took it out of the schools. It's what communists do. They erase the past and then they rewrite it. And when you say humility, to me, that's the key.
It is.
They mock people who pray. But again, this is a testament really from the outside. I think it has a lot of power because of that. If I think about prayer, the first thing that occurs to me is that when you pray, the first thing that happens is you are humbled.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's totally missing from progressives is humility. They have no respect for other people or people who disagree with them. They think they're like gods. And then you recall the Genesis story. And what does the serpent tell Adam and Eve that lures them out of paradise? If you eat of that tree, you shall be as God.
Yes.
It's that arrogance.
Yes.
That's why they kill so many people. It's all justified for them by the glorious world that we're going to bring about.
David, it's been too long since we have talked. I'd like to talk to you again. Maybe we'll have you in and do a podcast with you. The name of the book is Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America by David Horowitz. It is a must read and something that everyone should have, not only because of who David Horowitz is and the perspective that he has, but because this really shows clearly what is happening to us and what is not only happened, but is still going on. Dark Agenda, the War to Destroy Christian America by David Horowitz, available now.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Bridget Phetasy, she is a writer and the host of Walk-In's Welcome. She has just written something for The Spectator, Stop Wasting Your Money on College. And Bridget, I got to tell you, it's very, very funny and right on the money. Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Good.
How are you?
How old are you?
I'm 40.
You're 40.
I am.
And you dropped out of college your first year.
Yeah, many, many moons ago. Okay. I dropped out after the first half of my freshman year.
And you dropped out. I mean, that was at a time when everybody must have thought you were crazy. Nobody was talking about indoctrination or cost of school or
no.
Or alternative ways to learn anything. Why did you drop out?
I'm the oldest of five, and it was pretty mandatory that I go. It was just expected. And after my first semester, I knew I wanted to be a writer, and I saw what my loans were after one semester, and I just played the tape forward. I saw that basically if I got out of college, I would have these loans, that I would be strapped to the loans, and then I would end up having to take jobs that I hated and probably not be able to do what I wanted to do, which was write. And so I felt like I already knew how to write, and I knew basic grammar, and I took my chances. And it was a long road, but I don't regret that decision for 2 seconds.
I'm currently having the discussion. My kids are 12 and 14. My youngest, my two eldest, went to college. But now I because of indoctrination, the debt, the ridiculousness of it, you don't need it. I mean, unless you're going to be a doctor, you know, then you need it. But if for an average job, you can go to a trade school or you can learn online. It's endless the way you can learn.
That's the thing. There's so many other opportunities. You could go to a community college for 2 years and transfer and go to a state school for the final two and still get a degree if you're really gung-ho on getting a degree, or you just want to go to school to learn and try and figure out what you're interested in, which, fair enough. I had the blessing of knowing what I wanted to do pretty young. And that is something that I also don't take for granted. And I know that many people don't have that kind of vision or drive.
But you know what? You don't. Why would you spend $100,000?
I have no idea.
To find yourself? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
There's no return on investment, especially with the liberal arts schools now, the way that they are. I'm working on a piece and put a call out for people to tell me how they were self-censoring. And many of the emails that I've received are from students and colleges who feel like they can't express their opinion, their true opinion, which to me is insane, because college is where you're supposed to learn how to critically think.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is not the primary motivation of teachers these days, even in schools younger than college, but in college in particular.
You write, for most of you, however, college will be a four-year exercise in binge drinking, procrastinating, and chaining yourself to the dean's office in protest of a guest speaker who offends your delicate sensibilities. It's a bubble in which you will more than likely develop an Adderall addiction, a crippling anxiety disorder only exasperated by cry closets, and an attitude of enlightenment and moral superiority about privilege that will serve you well as a blogger in the outrage industrial complex and literally nowhere else in life ever.
How is that not worth the money? I don't understand.
By the way, there's four more paragraphs that I'd like to read on that, but it's the same kind of gist. You get it.
I think it's obviously written quite tongue-in-cheek
true. It is funny the way you say it, but it's true. You'll learn to indulge your feelings and believe that everyone else is responsible for them. You'll come to expect trigger warnings and safe spaces and everyone handling you with kid gloves. Basically, you won't learn much about life. It's all the freedom of adulthood with none of the responsibilities or consequences. That's all right.
It was interesting getting out of it was interesting being one of the people that didn't go to college and then seeing my friends get out of college and not have any idea how to do anything. So they don't teach you anything. I mean, I had at that point registered my car and had to go get an apartment and all of these very basic practical life skills. And my friends who just spent $100,000 on college couldn't do any of that. And what are you learning exactly? And if you get out of school with a degree, for instance, in gender studies, what are you going to do other than blog or teach gender studies? I really don't understand. I'm sure someone will, school me online with the other things you can do with this degree. But from my perspective, it's not practical. And how are you adding to? I think that the students that I've witnessed coming out seem to have, hand me a job because I went to college. So there's this attitude of just entitlement to life owing you something, as I said, and also just this inability to fail. You have to learn how to fail in life. We can't shield our kids from messing up.
I have to tell you, dinner with several people from Rwanda, and there were, I think, five women and a couple of guys that had come over from Rwanda and had gotten scholarships at Harvard and everywhere else. And these great schools gave them scholarships, and all of them but one were studying architecture, public systems, right. far as, you know, water systems. They were right. farming, all these things. One chose to stay here, and she was going to use her degree in feminine studies, women's studies, and the Holocaust. And I thought, you know, here are, I don't remember how many there were, five or six people. Five of them are going back, and they are going to make their country better, legitimately going to help build their country. They're living in a country that did have a Holocaust, but it is the most remarkable story of healing I've ever seen that you will never see in any grievance class. And she's staying here. It was just, it was so remarkable to me of what a waste that was.
I don't know enough about those, the individuals. And I would say that in situations like that, I'm not sure what inspires an individual to make a decision like that. I mean, I write, but I sometimes joke that I'm pretty useless, you know, like if the dollar collapses and like the, or the, oh. we all, if something happens and the grid goes down, yeah. I'm going to be pretty pointless.
You and I don't want to be around each other because they will actually eat you second to last because you'll at least be able to birth children. I'm the first one to go. I have no skills whatsoever except storytelling, and that one gets old really fast when people are hungry.
I'm 40 though, so the birthing years are, you know, approaching.
You better hope for the meltdown to happen soon. Otherwise,
yeah, it needs to
you and me
in the next couple of years, or I'm just basically gonna be food on the Barbie.
Yeah, Bridget, do you see that there's a real advantage for people coming out of high school in that four or four plus year head start? You know, where you have not only the financial part of the head start, where you're maybe $100,000 ahead of the game with no debt, but also you're able to work during that time and learn the business that you want to go into when everyone else is, you know, screwing around at college.
Yeah, I definitely, you know what, I learned how to be a hustler, and not a hustler in the bad sense of the word.
Are you there? Go ahead.
My phone may die.
That's
it's a landline, and apparently the batteries die in like 5 seconds.
But, wow, a landline. Who
I
has
know,
one?
They still make them.
It's wow. My apocalypse fears. no, I think that it taught me just how to, I have the confidence to be able to
Bridget, if you can still hear us, this is why you don't have a landline. This used to be for cell phones.
Can you hear me?
Yes. All right. So can you hear me now? Is everything okay now?
Yeah. I can hear you guys joking right, about how this segment was about how we can use a landline.
All right. So Bridget, here's the thing that I just read this the other day, and it's the only thing that gave me pause. My son, you know, he's not going. He wants to be either like a nurse practitioner or something like that, or a structural engineer, which he has to go to college for both of those things. There's other options in front of him that don't require college. And I just read 2 days ago that made me go, oh, geez, I don't want to screw up my son's life. It said those that do not have a college degree, men or boys that don't have a college degree now, they have a 40% unemployment rate.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to doom my kid to, you know, a future of unemployment, but at least he would be unemployed with no debt.
I mean, that's kind of how I feel. But why is this the unemployment? What are the reasons that they cite? Just not having a degree?
Because it's a chicken and egg situation, right? A lot of people who, you know, the society says if you're responsible, you go to college. So therefore, people who aren't responsible don't go to college.
Right. Or you're a dummy. You're not smart enough to get a degree. So everybody's got to have a college degree. So you just immediately brush off those who don't.
Right, right. I'm So when I, one of the things I was saying when I got cut off is that it taught me how the, that extra 4 years that I had in that space, I found my way into jobs that you would traditionally maybe need a degree for just because of tenacity, or you meet people, or you're out in the work field, one of which was working with autistic kids. And I was an aide privately because they didn't want people who had been trained in behavioral. They wanted more artistic people who might be able to think outside the box to do this program that then the families trained me in. And then I had all this life experience. And in a field like that, you really can't, you can't put, you know, if I wanted to go work for a school system, of course I would need a degree, but to work privately, I, if you have a gift with, you know, in a certain area, and it's an area where it's something like kids with autism, where it's challenging, and they're not going to care if you have a degree or not, if you're, if you have experience. And I think that, you know, I was reading an article the other day that I've received a lot of pushback on this, obviously, and it was about how the death rate is higher for people who don't go to college. And again, there's so many socioeconomic factors that are involved in that. And I don't really know. I would have to see the whole entire study and how they're studying these factors, because my brother didn't go to college. My brother went out and became a deep sea fisherman. And then he taught himself construction just by working with guys who were construction. He bought a house. He invested in silver. He is now a fireman. You know, he never, and he has a great life. He owns a house, and he's educated himself. And my my other sister didn't go to college. She went to college, but she started a whole organizing people's lives business. And you don't need to, you know, she said, I didn't need to go to college to help people basically Marie Kondo their lives. So I think that there are a lot of paths, and you really, and the other thing I was saying is that not going to college taught me resilience, and it taught me that I have an ability to find work or create work or go, you know, I was a waitress for years. And this is the other thing. I think people have this idea of work that's beneath them.
Yes.
And you just have to be able to take a job.
You do it.
What you have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do it and have work ethic and show up. And
I had a lot of horrible, horrible jobs. And I've had some good ones. But, I mean, you, when you're first starting, you have to be willing to do the worst. If they tell you clean the toilets, man, and just be the best at cleaning the toilets, and you will advance.
You will. And I and you'll learn from that job more than any other job. And you'll learn things that you never would have expected to learn. And you'll meet people. And, you know, how I love that expression, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yes.
So you are recognized for your work ethic no matter what you're doing. When I was in Japan, this was something that really struck me, was their work ethic and just their presence and attention to detail. Even the bartenders, just how much pride they had in whatever job they had. And that was something that I took even when I was waitressing. It would have been very easy for me to be angry. And instead I just kind of approached it like, I'm literally being of service. I get to just go up and this is my job and I'm being of service. And
Bridget,
I just think people have that. They have to just fuck up.
Bridget Fetisi, .com, British, Fetisi, .com. You can follow her. Thank you for being on the program. Love to talk again.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.